So thank you for this opportunity. I'm rather humbled to be asked to present here. Just a little bit of background on myself so you can get a frame of reference from where my comments are coming from. Currently, I'm the chief of the New Jersey Bureau of Marine Fisheries. I've been there in this position for about 2 years. Prior to that, I was the lead stock assessment biologist for New Jersey. I was New Jersey's representative on a number of technical and stock assessment committees through ASMFC. And prior to that, I was actually staff at ASMFC in their science and research department. And all told, I've been working with MRF data or MRF data since the late 1990s. And for whatever reason, I'm a data nerd, and the data has always been intriguing. The methodology has always been intriguing. So I feel like I've dove deeper into the methods than a lot of my colleagues. I would regularly get questions from other states and others on my staff, hey, can you do this MRIP analysis for me? So my comments today are basically coming from my 20 plus years as a data user and you know, using the data for analyses and things like that. I did speak with some folks on my in my office for this presentation. They gave me good insight and good material to present. But any errors or inconsistencies in communicating that information are all on me. So, and that being said, I also would like to, you know, obviously I don't think I have anything new that folks on the committee haven't heard before relative to MRIP and MRFs. But perhaps hopefully I've packaged it in a different way that hopefully is useful for this, for the task at hand. So a lot of what I'm going to present, you know, Kylie and Paul and Julia have already covered, Angela covered some as well. But again, hopefully it's, my presentation maybe repackages it so it's useful. And again, this is New Jersey's perspective, primarily my perspective. Within the Mid-Atlantic, we only have one example of in-season management. And it's, you know, I overlooked this. One of my staff had to remind me about it. We do use some form of in-season management in bluefish, where towards the end of the year we have partial year data, and if we have recreational quota that's left over and the commercial sector needs some, we consider a transfer of recreational quota to the commercial sector. That's the closest I think we come to actual in-season management, is this reallocation of quota towards the end of the year. There are no other examples that I can think of for the Mid-Atlantic region. Some states might have other examples, but and New Jersey does not. We do, you know, over my 20 years on technical committees, we did hear a lot about it. Hey, what if? Wouldn't it be great if kind of things? I often hear it asked about by our stakeholders, why can't we, or why isn't it done this way? You know, why can't we see what's happened in wave four and extend the black sea bass season during wave five and six? The answer is always the same. The data and the methodology we have currently don't support that. As Kylie and Julia talked about earlier, probably the biggest candidates would be for summer flounder and black sea bass. These are jointly managed by ASMFC and the Mid-Atlantic Council. They're very popular target species. And with state quotas and, you know, heavy effort, we're always chasing F, we're always chasing the recreational harvest limit. And trying to, you know, get as much out of the fisheries we can. So if we're under 1 year, we'll change our regulations to try and get every last fish. If we're over, we have to make regulations, you know, change our regulations so that we don't go over the next year. And there is some, you know, some, we don't try to get every last fish every year, as Julia was saying, but quite regularly, we're trying to get down to the very last fish. And as Kylie and Julia also mentioned, we're using partial year data to help set next year's regulations. And so one of the questions on the statement of task is, what is, you know, what would be my assessment of this in-season management framework? And the answer, at least from my, from the state perspective, would be very frustrating. And the reason for that is because of, as we've discussed, the timing of the estimates doesn't line up with when we're trying to set these regulations. And also the uncertainty in the estimates makes it very difficult to project very consistently. And what we end up with is a significant investment in staff time as we work through the process over several months. I know Kylie mentioned this earlier, but I'm going to take a little bit deeper dive into this process of how we actually do this. So at the December Mid-Atlantic Council meeting, so we're halfway through wave six. We've got harvest data through wave four. So it probably comes late October, early November. So we're starting the process sometime in wave six. We've got data through wave four and we're projecting through the end of the year. And the figures here show for the last couple of years what the wave, first four waves of harvest is and what our projection is for the end of the year based on those 4 months, or excuse me, four waves. Once we have this data, states have a bit of a, a goalpost. We know it's going to move, but we have a goalpost that we can start the process of setting our recreational regulations. And what's involved with that is we do some sort of analysis. We talk with our fishing advisors. What kind of season do you want? How would you want to change it? Do you want to change your size, season, or bag limit? We start working on options that might adjust, that might address the under or overage that we have on the table. We draft a proposal for ASMFC. There's a bunch of technical committee meetings. We start checking everyone else's math. There's a whole process involved. It's not just, okay, let's, here's our endpoint. There's a whole process involved. At the February meeting, we've got preliminary wave five data. And I'll mention that this is for black sea bass. At least in New Jersey, our summer flounder season is over long before the end of the year, but sea bass continues through December. But in February, we have the preliminary wave five data. So we can come up with new harvest estimates through wave five in gray here, and then a new projection through the end of the year in yellow. All right, so our projection has changed. So states go back and start the process, not start the process over, but they rejigger their analysis, come up with different options, reevaluate everyone's methodology, things like that. And then sometime in March or April, we finally have full year estimates, waves one through six. So the states now in March and April can start finalizing their options. More technical committee meetings. We talk with advisors on what the options should be. April and May, it goes through the ASMFC Management Board. New Jersey then takes it to the our Marine Fisheries Council in May, where we can finalize what the options are and start the rule adoption process. And usually that's the first or second week of May. And for black sea bass, we're usually starting May 15th. So we started in November and we're really pushing up against our start date before we actually have anything finalized. So what sort of things in my mind could we do to help this process or to make the data more usable for actual in-season management? The two things that come to mind, as I mentioned, were the timing of the data and the uncertainty in the data. So I've got a couple of slides on each of those. Our current methods, there's a one to two wave lag time in getting the finalized estimates for earlier in the year. We're getting waves three and four estimates sometime in late wave five or early wave six. And I think Dr. Lorenzen asked earlier, are these seasons open long enough that we could actually do something? One example, in New Jersey, our summer flounder season is only open around 120 days. We open sometime mid wave three and we're closed sometime early to mid wave five. So the season is closed before we get waves three and four data. Our central season is Memorial Day to Labor Day. And if we have extra days of, we extend on either end, but generally we're not fishing in recent years, we're not fishing later than like the 15th or 20th of September. So currently we don't have time to use in-season management for summer flounder in New Jersey. Black sea bass, we do fish through the end of the year, again, starting around May 15th through the end of the year. We would have an opportunity, but not always, not with all species. So obviously ways that we could improve the timing would be to streamline the data collection and the auditing process. I know that MRIP, I think all states are using it now. Just sometime last year, New Jersey started using tablets for the APIS component, for the dockside intercept. So that cuts down on time, so that's helping some. But I did confirm with our lead APIS staff that there are no data entry flags on those tablets. So if there was a way that we could get flags set up so that if you're putting in the wrong size limit or a fish length that's outside of, a reasonable range, it would flag it so that we could speed up the auditing process. There are audit flags when we submit the data, but I hear that the turnaround time, so we get APIS staff or MRIP staff review the data submissions on a rolling basis, but a lot of times those aren't edited until the end of the month, monthly fish dump. We will get any edits and corrections that we've submitted. And then another alternative would be to look for data from different data sources. Angela talked about volunteer angler surveys in Maryland. New Jersey also has one. We've been running that since about 2008. We only download the data once every year, but we could look at it more regularly. We also have a striped bass bonus program. We convert our commercial quota to a bonus season for the recreational fishery. And we do look at that in season, but we don't use it to adjust our regulations. Another method would be to streamline or short circuit the estimation procedure itself. So once the data are in, I'm not sure why it takes an extra month or so to do the analysis itself. I'm not questioning it, I just don't understand what the process is. I've never been involved with that end of the MRIP data. But ways that we could do it and would be perhaps, is there some relationship between the raw and expanded values? Is there a way that we can just draw some conclusions without doing the expansion process? Or again, if we have data, the electronic VTR data, the for hire vessels are required to submit VTRs and it's all electronic now. So hopefully the turnaround time for that data would be relatively quick. Is there maybe some relationship between that data that we get on a quick turnaround? Would we be able to use that to estimate what is happening in the rest of the fishery on a more real-time basis? And then again, one question that I've always had is, we get preliminary estimates within a couple of months. What is the difference between the preliminary data and the final estimates? And is the difference between the preliminary and the final data, is it significant? Is it something that we need to be concerned with relative to the PSCs that we already see in the data? We've got the data itself is relatively uncertain. Is the difference between the final and the preliminary so large that it would, is it dwarfed by or does it dwarf the PSE uncertainty? So some ideas there for timeliness of the data. As far as uncertainty goes, one thing that I've always, it's been a pet peeve of mine, and obviously it's a funding issue, but the sample size is concerning. And in New Jersey, you can see in the table here that we're looking at about, it's less than half of 0.1%. It's tiny in terms of the number of trips that are intercepted compared to the estimated number of total trips taken in New Jersey. 0.02%, 0.03%. So obviously that's going to create uncertainty in the estimates depending on who actually gets sampled. So ways to improve that, funding, obviously, either at the state or federal levels. I heard the other day that North Carolina, I know most states increase their base assignments. Someone said that North Carolina can increase their assignments by like ninefold, any four or five up to ninefold. We don't do any of that in New Jersey, so shame on us. But certainly increasing sample size would help. Additional funding to increase sample size. And then again, alternative reporting venues such as volunteer angler surveys, logbooks, whether they're mandatory or voluntary. We've looked into doing panel surveys in New Jersey, haven't ever gotten our feet on the ground with that one. VTRs in New Jersey are required only for vessels fishing in federal waters. There's no state only VTRs, fishing in federal waters or fishing for federal species. So folks only fish for state species in state waters. They do not need to fill out a VTR. So there's a loophole that we could fill to get more data. Another thing that's always been a question in my mind since we switched from MRFs to MRIP is the expansion factors, taking it from the raw data to the expanded data. And I've never understood and never gotten a sufficient answer on how that expansion is actually done. The concern is you can see these plots here show that in New Jersey over the last few years, the median expansion weight is about 1,200. And both the mean and the 75th percentile are around 3,600. So one trip would be expanded by, you know, this ratio to expand observed catch to total catch. But you can see that there's a very long tail. And even though the median is 1,200, we have site weights that exceed 100,000. So that one trip is expanded by 100,000. And so if you look at a cumulative weight, and I think I did this analysis right, I took the survey ID over the last number of years and just stripped off this the interview number. So if anyone's looked at the raw data, I got rid of the 001, 002. And then I took out any of the duplicates. So I think I'm looking at interviewer site days for this analysis. And if you do a cumulative plot of the interview site day weights, you can see about 10% of our surveys count for 50 to 60% of the overall expansion weight. And again, I don't know what this methodology is. I'm not saying it's wrong. I just don't know what it is. And there should be some transparency in that, so that we can understand what the meaning of these sites that have expansion factors of 50, 60, or 100,000 and how they affect our estimates. And one idea I think some of these weights are based on the fishing pressure that occurs at these waves, or excuse me, at these sites. And those are updated when we have a site interviewer go to the site. They'll check, you know, compare how many vessels or how many anglers they see relative to what we have put in there in the past for how many we would expect to see. And so it gets updated on a rolling basis, but for these sites that aren't intercepted, that aren't assigned very often, we're not updating that data all that often either. So one thought I've always had about trying to get better pressure estimates is, do we have security footage that we can look at in terms of, I'm going back more without sending a person out there more regularly, is there some form of footage that we can look at? Can we set up trail cams at the boat ramps to see how many boats are coming in and out of the water? And then one last thing is just, it's always brought up when we talk about MRIP, but recall bias, prestige bias, and number bias. This is particularly important for discards. If you look at the discard, some of the discard information, you'll see number bias where people are more likely to report that they caught 10 or 15 or 20, you know, a number ending with a zero or a five, rather than, you know, if I actually had 12 discards, I would either say 15 or 10. So there's a number bias there. There's also what, you know, could be considered a recall bias. People know they have a good day, but they're not tallying how many fish they throw away. And if you actually do an analysis and look at the catch rates of the discards, you'll see people who are quite commonly saying that they discarded a fish every 3-5 minutes for an entire 2 or 3 hour fishing trip. And if that were me, my arms would be really tired. So I can imagine that they're exaggerating a bit or misrecalling what they actually did. It was a good day. It was a busy day. But you weren't, either you were forgetting to take the fish off the hook or you didn't actually catch that many fish. So again, a couple of ways to get better discard estimates, volunteer angler surveys. Angela said that it's good for discard lengths, and that, you know, that's important also for, you know, if we have catch-based rather than harvest-based ACLs. But yes, logbooks, panel surveys, volunteer angler surveys could also help with these biases that are often seen in the data. A couple other things that I wanted to bring up. There's regularly a disconnect between our annual catch limits and the MRIP estimates. Our harvest limits are usually set in pounds, and MRIP does a really good job of estimating numbers. And we have to convert those estimated harvest numbers to pounds. A lot of times we don't have weights for all of the cells that were sampled, so we're doing gap filling and things like that. If we had some better sampling of weights, that would certainly be helpful. Julia talked this morning about the recreational reform, so I'm not going to touch on that too much, but some ideas that we were looking at were identifying and smoothing outliers, whether we use single or multi-year data, and some envelope of uncertainty. If we're close enough, do we have to change our regulations or our methodologies? There's also some talk about, that also folds into management discretion and our flexibility to avoid having to chase F or chasing our ACLs. And that's not necessarily something that we need to change with MRIP, but it's certainly, you know, it might boil down to, do we have to change legislation or policy rather than or even just our mindset rather than changing the survey itself? And then lastly, this was brought up by someone on my staff. A few years ago, there was some discussion about MRFs or NOAA, MRIP, whoever, not reporting wave level data in the future if the PSE was above some acceptable level. So if PSEs were too high, they weren't going to provide wave level data. And if we're gonna try and do in-season management, I think it's imperative that we see all of the data regardless of the PSE.
Yeah, I added Kubota on to the snow pay. And I was like,
this is my last slide. I don't know how I'm doing on time, but.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're hearing a lot of conversation. If people could please take a moment to mute themselves so that Jeff can continue. Particularly our call-in users, if they're using your cell phone, please make sure your phones are on mute. Sorry about that, Jeff. Go ahead.
Not a problem. This is my last slide, so hopefully I haven't gone too far over. The last question in the list that I was asked to report on was, what are some of the trade-offs? Obviously, some of the inputs would be additional funding, additional staff time. There would be, you know, if we do go with alternative data collection methods, there would need to be some front end effort to validate that method relative to how it works or how it would be able to mesh with the MRIP data. I wasn't sure, you know, this probably depends on the species and methodology, but is there increased uncertainty going with, you know, more granular data? If we'd be working at, you know, it would be more granular, and we know that the smaller cells you get to, the higher the uncertainty in the MRIP data. But if we have improved sampling, do those two things outweigh or, you know, balance each other out? And in terms of, you know, if that's the inputs, what are the outcomes? What do we get out of this extra time and extra funding? Improved flexibility in setting management measures, improved flexibility in being able to maintain status quo, I think that would go a long way towards angler satisfaction. And, you know, I think that's quite often an overlooked component of fisheries management, particularly the way we've been doing it recently, chasing that RHL, that harvest limit, to meet Magnuson. I think a lot of times we might be doing it with less consideration than should be given to the angler satisfaction. And if we can get better satisfaction, then obviously I would expect that the angler buy into the management process in cooperation with actually responding to APIS intercepts would go up and, you know, hopefully improve the management process overall. So that's what I have. I apologize again. I don't know how much time I took, but happy to take any questions if there are any.